They always say journalists are immune to lies, until the lie comes wrapped in good dick, a Jamaican accent and a smile that feels like prophecy. My name is Maya. I'm an investigative reporter. And I got played, mind, body and bank account, by a man who didn't just seduce me, he studied me. He used offshore accounts, fake mentorship programs and body language like a weapon. He made me believe it was love. Until I uncovered the network of women, the dark psychology, and the trap I never saw coming. This isn't a love story. It's a survival story of how I turned from his prey to his punishment. He tried to stigmatize me, and it worked. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform now, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. I met Winston the day I was supposed to be working. It was a humid Brooklyn Saturday, the kind that made your thighs stick together in jeans and your thoughts melt into mango pulp. I was supposed to be covering a feature on Caribbean immigrant-owned businesses for the paper. A safe, soft assignment, low risk, low stakes. But what I didn't know was that the man I was about to interview wasn't just hustling tourist rides. He was selling fantasy. And I bought it like a damn fool. He walked in late, of course. Said he was across Flatbush a deal with a gil from D Bronx who need to pay up. That accent? It did things to me. The deep Kingston lilt wrapped in a laugh that could disarm a border patrol dog. His dreads were tied back loose, beads at the end brushing his collarbone. His gold chain caught the light like it was meant to blind me, and maybe it did. Winston was everything I knew I should avoid. Smooth talker, suspiciously charming, dressed like he sold cologne out the trunk of his car and slept in linen. And yet I couldn't stop staring. He looked at me like he knew I was already halfway wet. "You a real journalist? Or just plain dress up for the camera?" he asked, eyes sliding down my blouse like it owed him something. I should have snapped back. Should have flexed my degree. "That," I laughed. "Like an idiot." "No," I said, "I'm very real. And I have questions." "Me got answers, baby," he smiled. "But you not ready for them." And just like that, the game began. We did the interview at a juice bar he co-owned, technically, he said, smirking. His name was nowhere on the lease and every receipt said Marlon D. Instead. He leaned back while I took notes, sipping from a steel straw like he wasn't feeding me carefully curated tales. I asked about his move from Jamaica. He made it sound like a rags-to-riches story, came to Flatbush with one suitcase and a duffel bag full of skill. Claimed he taught ski techniques to rich white people in Vermont by winter and gave celestial insights at a Rasta healing shop by summer. Said he used to be a tour guide in Negril, but now he was building an offshore art exploration platform for black entrepreneurs. Sounded like bullshit. But damn, it was sexy bullshit. He spoke like he read Robert Greene backwards and forward. Slid between business talk, social manipulation, and whispered patois like a magician. He even quoted market psychology like he knew what the hell it meant. And I, the woman who studied behavioral psychology at Columbia, still fell for it. By the end of the interview, my mind was racing, but not about the story. I was thinking about what his hands might do if they weren't holding a steel straw. I was thinking about the way his voice dipped low when he leaned in to say my name. I was thinking with everything except the brain I was trained to use. And then, just before I left, he did it. He slid his phone across the table. "No pressure," he said, "but me want see you again. And not as no journalist." I took the phone. I typed my number. And I pressed send. Later that night, I stared at my ceiling in the dark. My body was humming like it knew something I didn't. My head said, "He's a con artist. You've covered this before. Offshore accounts, fake equity plays, influence scams. Girl, you wrote a whole piece called Dark Forces in the Age of Trust." But my thighs said let him come. And he did. The next night. The next several nights. Winston wasn't just good in bed. He was strategic. Surgical. Like he studied my body as a blueprint for control. Like he was engineering me for addiction. Every thrust, every whisper, every pause. It was calculated, like he understood body intelligence and social psychology in ways textbooks hadn't even touched. He made me forget I had deadlines. He made me forget myself. I should have seen it coming. The late night disappearances. The burner phones. The stack of business cards with 10 different job titles. The USB stick labeled PS1 I found under his bed next to a pink thong that wasn't mine. But I didn't care. because by then I was already digmatized. And Winston was just getting started. I didn't expect to fall so fast. But that's the thing about seduction. It doesn't show up with warnings or disclaimers. It arrives soft, wet, and whispered. Like Winston. The first night he came over, he brought nothing but a black gym bag and that look. The one that said, "I'm gonna ruin you, but you'll thank me." He didn't kiss me at the door. He kissed the side of my neck slowly. Like he was reading me, calibrating my breath, my pause, the way my hands twitched near my thighs. Then he walked past me like he owned the place. My apartment had never felt so small. Or so hot. Winston made sex feel like prophecy. He didn't just touch me, he studied me. Every moan got cataloged. Every twitch got mapped. He said things like, "Me love how your mind and your body disagree, baby," while looking straight into my soul. It wasn't just sex. It was manipulative design. Engineered to bypass my logic and override my principles. He bit my shoulder and whispered, "You gon' think about me when you're writing your stories?" I wasn't writing shit. My laptop stayed closed for days. We'd sleep, fuck, sleep again. Wake up tangled. Then he'd cook, shirtless, making ackee and saltfish like he was born to be half naked and covered in coconut oil. His phone stayed face down though. And when it buzzed too much, he'd step outside for a minute. But I ignored that. I ignored the way he never answered simple questions directly. I ignored the tags cut off his clothes. I even ignored the fact that he couldn't explain what exactly art exploration consulting meant. Because every time I questioned him, he answered by devouring me, slowly until I could barely remember what I asked. I told myself it was chemistry. That I was just a woman in her prime enjoying a man who knew what the hell he was doing. But in the silence, when the sheets stopped moving, my mind began racing. Why did his business trips always happen around the first of the month? Why did he never let me post him? Why did I find a second phone tucked into his sock drawer, filled with screenshots of bank wires, DMs from random women, and a voice memo titled "Mitigation Techniques, Voice Training Number 3? I started listening to it. It was him, practicing tone shifts. Literally rehearsing emotional cadences. Lower the voice when they cry. Pause before you ask them for help. Praise their intuition to override logic. I nearly dropped the phone. That night he called me twice. I didn't answer. So he came over. And when he touched me, I still let him in. That's the worst part. The dick was that good. Afterward, I lay there, breathless, raw, legs still twitching, and asked, "Are you playing me?" He didn't flinch. Just kissed my knee and said, "Me wouldn't waste me skill on you if you weren't worth it." And I smiled. Like a fucking idiot. Because I wasn't just sleeping with Winston anymore. I was surrendering to a con artist who used dark psychology like foreplay and turned my own body intelligence into a weapon against me. And the worst part? I was beginning to like it. You ever lie to yourself so hard your conscience goes quiet? That was me. By the third week, Winston was in my bed more than my sheets were. He still didn't have a place of his own. Claimed he was in between spots. Said his offshore accounts were tied up due to a currency block. I didn't even know what the hell that meant, and I cover financial fraud for a living. But again, I let it slide. Because he fucked me like the truth didn't matter. The first red flag came wrapped in lace. A burgundy bra, not mine, left in my laundry bin. When I asked him about it, he laughed like I was the crazy one. "You sure dat not yours?" he said, already halfway inside me again. And I let it go. Because my brain was scrambled, my body buzzing, and my standards buried under orgasm fatigue. That was the first game. Distraction as denial. The second red flag came in the form of a woman, calling my phone. She sounded calm. Too calm. "Is this the number Winston stays at?" I froze. "Who's this?" "I'm his wife." I didn't answer. Just hung up and sat in silence, watching Winston cook barefoot in my kitchen like nothing happened. He was humming Barris Hammond, stirring curry chicken, looking like a black god sent to destroy me with plantains and pelvic power. That night, I didn't ask him a damn thing. That's when I knew I was compromised. I started losing time. Missing deadlines. Ignoring voicemails from my editor. Turning down assignments because I wasn't feeling well. Winston had me twisted. I started second-guessing my own instincts. Like my gut was malfunctioning. And the irony? I'd written entire series on social engineering, con artists, dark psychology, even a podcast on audio manipulation and the power of tone and cadence in persuasion techniques. but none of it mattered once Winston whispered, "Me miss ya when me not inside ya." I was a journalist, but I was acting like a junkie. Then came the gaslighting. He'd change details in conversations we'd had. Deny shit I saw with my own eyes. Make me feel crazy for even asking. Me wouldn't even do dat to you, love. You really think me dat kind of man. Babe, ya overthinking. Me die here. Ain't dat proof enough? Stop play investigator and start being yourself. The more I pushed, the more he punished me with passion. He weaponized pleasure. Made it so that every confrontation ended in sweaty sheets, tangled legs, and me crying into his chest while he stroked my hair and whispered apologies laced in patois. That was the worst part. Not the lies. Not the cheating. It was the way he made me doubt me. He didn't just manipulate the facts. He rearranged my emotional compass. Like a master of behavioral psychology, he leveraged silence, affection, and shame as tools and tactics, all while selling me dreams of building together. But every time I asked about his businesses, he gave me the same line. Me handling it, offshore is complicated, love. But me building Phi We. And I'd nod. Because I was losing grip. Because I was stigmatized. Because I couldn't tell the difference between desire and deception anymore. That night, I opened a folder on my laptop I hadn't touched in weeks. Curated tales. Psychological manipulation cases. I scrolled past interviews, notes, case files. Every story started the same. A charismatic man, a woman who doubted herself, and a web of subtle lies that turned her into a shadow of who she used to be. I read those stories with a new kind of fear. Because now, I was one of them. And I was starting to think. Winston knew exactly what he was doing. Everyone has secrets. But Winston's weren't buried, they were engineered. By the time I realized I was sleeping with a con artist, I had already helped him hide half of his trail. Without knowing. Letting him crash at my place? That was cover. Putting his laundry in with mine? That destroyed trace evidence. Giving him Wi-Fi access? That gave him my IP address and my patterns. This wasn't love. This was a psychological operation. It started with the offshore accounts. I'd seen something in his phone one morning while he showered. A notification from an encrypted finance app one didn't recognize. Not Cash App. Not Zelle. Something darker. Kraken.fx. Funds received. I googled it. Crypto. Offshore routing. Shell wallets. And Winston had five of them. He walked out of the shower with a towel slung low and a smirk on his face. You spying now? I shrugged. I'm a journalist. What did you expect? He laughed. Then he dropped the towel and fucked me against the counter so hard I forgot what I was accusing him of. That was his mitigation technique. Attack the mind with the body. But that was the last time I let it slide. Something inside me had shifted. Not anger. Not betrayal. Something deeper. Journalistic instinct. The part of me that could see past the art techniques of deception, the language nuances, the emotional decision-making traps. I knew the persuasion methods he was using. I'd studied them. And now I was living them. So I started collecting. Burner phone records from our trash. Names he dropped casually in bed. A list of his clients from voice memos he'd forgotten to delete. One of them was a woman I knew, an attorney who'd once helped take down a real estate scam in Queens. I reached out. He ghosted me. 2 days later, I got a text from a random number. He's dangerous. If you're in, stay in. If you're out, disappear. For your safety. My blood turned to ice. I set up a private folder on my work server. Password protected, eyes only. Labeled it. Shadowed Truth / Winston Investigation. It's like photos of him handing off envelopes at odd hours. A full transcript of a conversation I recorded while pretending to sleep. And a name I couldn't stop staring at, Backroads Bill. That name came up in a call he took at 2 a.m. He said, "Tell Backroads Bill it's done. The girl's locked in." Girl. Locked in. Was that me? The deeper I dug, the darker it got. He wasn't just a hustler. He was part of a network. Scams tied to art laundering, fake wellness retreats, offshore crypto schemes, and a social engineering cult called Celestial Insights. It was like a web of ring intelligence, built around psychological warfare, with Winston acting as one of the influence engineers. I was supposed to be a target. But now I was a threat. He started sensing it. He stopped sleeping over. Started locking his phone with fingerprint plus voice recognition. Called me tense. told me I was picking fights for no reason, stopped bringing food, stopped kissing me, but he still fucked me like he wanted me under his control. And for a while I let him, because I wasn't just investigating him anymore. I was baiting him, letting him think he still had power, so I could trace it, so I could record it, so I could take it back. One night after he fell asleep, I searched his bag. Inside was a brown envelope with 3 fake IDs, all with his face, all different names, a USB labeled PS1, and a black leather journal with one line scribbled over and over. Trust is the first tool of influence. That was it. That was the moment the seduction died, and the story was born. I wasn't the victim anymore. I was the journalist again. And Winston? Winston was now the subject. They say when a con collapses, the only thing louder than the lies is the silence that follows. Winston stopped calling. No texts. No midnight pop-ups. No Mia reach, followed by a knock and dick that made me forget every red flag he ever waved. Just silence. I thought I'd be relieved free. But withdrawal is a sick bitch. Especially when it's not just your heart on the line. It's your body, your pride, your career. I wasn't just detoxing from dick. I was detoxing from the identity I let him sculpt. A version of me that craved his chaos. The silence didn't last long. It was replaced by obsession. I dug deeper. I started pulling financial records through encrypted channels, tapping journalist contacts in Miami, Kingston, Toronto. Turns out Winston had women across multiple countries. Some wired him money under fake business mentorship programs. Others thought they were engaged. He was building an empire of manipulation. One orgasm, one wire transfer at a time. But I was different. I wasn't trying to expose him for a headline. I was trying to get my damn self back. Still, my body betrayed me. I dreamed about him. I'd wake up with sweat between my thighs, angry and aching. I hated him. I wanted him. I hated that I wanted him. That's when I stopped showing up to work. I ignored 3 meeting requests. My editor left a voicemail that said, "Are you okay? Or is this another one of your research phases?" I wanted to tell her. I wanted to say, "I'm living inside the damn story." But I didn't. Because saying it out loud meant admitting I let a criminal with nice teeth and Caribbean slang reduce me to a cliché. The journalist who got too close to her subject and fell apart. I started crying during random things. Watching a street vendor flip plantains. Seeing an old couple hold hands on the 2 train. Hearing Garnet Silk on the radio. It wasn't grief. It was humiliation. This wasn't just heartbreak. It was identity collapse. I stopped eating. I stopped sleeping. I stopped checking the server room where I stored my evidence folder. Shadowed truths. Because part of me didn't want to finish the story. Because finishing meant letting him go. And I wasn't ready. Then came the final straw. I got a DM from a woman named Claire. White. Blonde. From Connecticut. "Hi. Sorry to message you like this. But I found your number saved in Winston's phone. I think we're both being played." He sent me a photo. Him. Shirtless. In her bed. Same chain. Same smile. Different script. He told her he was a music consultant. That he was investing in reggae restoration. That he'd been emotionally damaged by an aggressive black woman who tried to ruin his name in Brooklyn. That aggressive woman? Me. I broke. Not just because he was still out there. Not just because he lied. But because I realized I had let him rewrite me in other people's mouths. He'd turned me from lover to cautionary tale. And the worst part? I hadn't stopped loving him. That night I screamed into a pillow until my throat burned. I threw every notebook across the room. I poured red wine on his journal and watched the words, "Trust is the first tool of influence," bleed into the paper. Then I slept. Not deeply. But I slept. And when I woke up, I opened the Shadowed Truths folder. And I started writing. Because he thought he broke me. But what he really did was give me a reason to burn everything down. When journalists get heartbroken, we don't cry. We document. And that's what I did. I pulled myself out of bed, brushed the wine-crusted anger off my chest, opened my laptop and started dragging files into a single timeline. Winston thought he'd reduced me to silence. But he forgot one thing. I don't just write stories. I expose systems. And Winston wasn't just a man. He was a system of manipulation. A walking ecosystem of emotional warfare, market deception, and seductive influence mastery. and I was about to bring it all down. I began by organizing the footage, the voice notes, the call logs, the burner texts, screenshots from Claire, DMs from five other women. Each one told a slightly different story, but the patterns were the same: flattery, passion, promises, offshore opportunities, and then financial requests disguised as shared vision. It was textbook dark psychology. But what set Winston apart was his delivery. He didn't just ask. He made you want to give. I contacted a friend in cybersecurity, a quiet genius who owed me a favor. We set up a private encrypted vault on a shadow server, labeled it Digmatized, the project. Inside, we mapped Winston's moves across Brooklyn, Miami, Kingston, and Toronto using metadata, bank routing footprints, and even server room pings from fake websites he built to lure clients. He used AI voiceovers to impersonate financial coaches. He cloned landing pages of legitimate empowerment seminars and swapped the payment gateways to his own offshore wallet. This wasn't romance. This was engineering crime as intimacy. I started seeing the full picture. Winston wasn't just charming, he was trained. Every pause, every breath, every stroke, every climax. It was part of his persuasion method arsenal. He leveraged cognitive psychology to dismantle resistance. He used NLP techniques to implant trust. He tracked market emotions to time his pitches. He didn't date women. He recruited them. I filed a soft trace report through a journalist protection contact at the Southern Investigative Collaborative, a quiet network of female reporters who'd been burned too. Turns out, I wasn't the first to file a shadow inquiry on Winston. There were two sealed cases under different aliases. And they both disappeared. Buried bylines. No follow-up. No arrests. Just silence. The kind that reeks of offshore hush money. So I started leaking. Small strategic burst. A tweet thread. A Medium article under a burner name. A podcast clip of Winston describing his mentorship program. Everything went viral within 48 hours. Suddenly, the unfiltered narrative of his love games became a trending conversation across Black Twitter, Reddit, and podcast spaces. I didn't use his name yet, but he knew. Because that night he called. Blocked number. No words. Just his breath. And then, "You're really gone public pon me?" I didn't answer. He whispered, "Me train ya fi war, and ya wan fight me now?" Then he hung up. I didn't sleep that night. Instead, I stared at the blinking cursor on my screen. Then typed. The art of seduction is not in the touch. It's in the timing. Winston moved like a ghost but fucked like God. He weaponized body language. He crafted emotional dependency. And when I was fully disarmed, he robbed me blind. I submitted the draft to my editor the next morning. No title. No explanation. Just a note that said, "This one's personal. Let it run uncensored." And she did. Because she knew this wasn't just a story. This was a war. And Winston? Winston was about to learn. I don't lose wars. Traps aren't just set. They're designed, with precision, silence, and the kind of patience most people mistake for forgiveness. And Winston? He had no idea I'd stopped crying the moment I started planning. The podcast episode dropped at midnight. It didn't mention his name. Didn't show his face. Didn't need to. The story was too specific. Too intimate. Too true. 30 minutes of raw, haunting detail about a charming Caribbean manipulator, who used body language, emotional warfare, market psychology, and offshore deception to seduce, isolate, and scam multiple women. I used a modulated voice filter and released it anonymously under the burner series name. Shadows of Justice. The Digmatizer Files. The internet exploded. By dawn, three more women came forward. Then five. Then nine. All from different cities. All saying the same things. He made me feel like I was the only one. He said he needed seed money for a mentorship program. He had a PowerPoint about body intelligence. He filmed us and I didn't know. Suddenly, Winston wasn't just a man. He was a case study in influence and art. A walking experiment in social manipulation, audio engineering, and psychological warfare. But still, I needed more. A confession. A nail. Something he couldn't walk away from. So I called him. Sweet. Soft. Apologetic. Told him I was sorry for the drama. Told him I was still his. Told him I missed him. I layered my voice with weakness and desperation, like a perfect cocktail of emotional vulnerability and manipulation mastery. He bit instantly. He came over that night, looking sharp, clean, safe. That same linen shirt. That same chain. That same false innocence. But I wasn't the same. My apartment was wired. My mic was live. My phone was recording in the server room. He walked in, kissed me like nothing had happened, and said, "Me know you miss me." I moaned, "I miss everything, but I need to understand." I asked about the women, the program, the money, the fake IDs. At first he denied. Then he pivoted. Then he confessed. It was subtle. A slip. A whisper. Everybody hustle in dem own way, me love. Some sell dreams, me sell connection. That was it. One line. But layered in intent. Legally enough. Emotionally. More than enough. I let him sleep beside me. Let him hold me one last time. Then I got up while he slept and uploaded the file. Within hours, the clip hit 500,000 plays. The audio was haunting. His voice low, rhythmic, soft with seduction, but lined with coldness. It na manipulation if dem happy while me do it. The public tore him apart. By sundown, influencers were posting side-by-sides. Journalists dug up old fraud claims. A crypto scam alert site posted one of his shell company names, traced directly to an offshore account registered under a dead cousin's name in Montego Bay. And then the final blow came. His visa flagged. Someone, maybe me, maybe one of the other women, had submitted all the evidence to Homeland Security. He called me in a panic. "Me know you set me up." I stayed silent. "You mash up me life, you hear me?" Still silent. "Me shoulda never let you get so close." That made me smile. Because that was the truth he never wanted to say. I got close. Closer than any of them. Close enough to love him. Close enough to end him. When I hung up, I didn't cry. I didn't shake. I didn't miss him. I just whispered into the quiet. "Never underestimate the woman you thought was stigmatized." He came back. Not on fire. Not with rage. But like a man whose empire had crumbled between his fingers. Ashes on his breath, failure in his eyes. A fake Rolex that didn't even tick anymore. 3 weeks after the podcast dropped and the confessions went viral, Winston showed up at my door. No chain. No cologne. No script. Just a hoodie, bloodshot eyes, and that damn accent I used to fall into like a spell. I didn't flinch when I saw him. Didn't gasp. Didn't brace. Just looked him up and down like he was an old coat I forgot I owned. Heavy, damaged, and no longer my style. "Me know me mash up your heart," he said. "No," I said. "You almost did." But I caught the pieces before they hit the floor. He looked confused. Like he didn't know how to handle a woman who'd outgrown him. He tried to reach for my hand. I stepped back. Not in fear. In clarity. Winston's empire had collapsed. His shell companies were frozen. His visa was under review. Every woman he scammed was now part of a growing documentary team working on The Influence Blueprint. Sex, scams, and psychological warfare. Me. I was executive producing. He stood there for a long time. Silent. Soaked in his own guilt. And maybe, finally, the truth. "I never meant fi hurt ya," he said, almost whispering. "But you did," I replied. "And the part that hurts most?" I leaned in. Close enough for him to remember what he lost. "You could have had me. All of me. If you were real." Then I kissed his forehead. Soft. Final. And closed the door. Inside, I sat in the same chair where I'd cried for him. Screamed for him. Burned for him. And I felt nothing. No ache. No thirst. No rage. Just freedom. Because the truth is he never really had me. Not fully. Winston seduced the lonely in me. But he couldn't touch the journalist. The woman. The warrior. He manipulated my skin. But he underestimated my mind. So I poured myself a drink. Logged into my podcast dashboard. Watched the numbers climb into the millions. Then I pressed record. And said, "This story isn't just about sex. It's about control. About power. About how some men think their dick is a key to the world. When really, it's just a weapon they sharpen on broken women." I paused. Then smiled. "Not this woman."